This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Today's podcast is sponsored by FastBitcoins.com. FastBitcoins.com provides a simple way for people to buy Bitcoin directly from their bank account or with cash in physical stores. Their services are available in the UK, Estonia, and Canada, and they'll soon be available in parts of Asia, Africa, and Australia too. FastBitcoins is committed to building high-quality Bitcoin-only services. They want to make sure that the growing number of people interested in buying and benefiting from Bitcoin can do so easily, securely, and with as little hassle as possible. Find out more about their services at FastBitcoins.com, including how you can earn Bitcoin for free using their referral scheme. That's FastBitcoins.com. Go check them out.
I am the man, sick with the slang, sick and I'm destined for fame. Do for the fam, not for the grand, stunt me, destined for pain. I do not front, I do not scam, put some respect on my name. Sick like a
What's up, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls around the world? I would like to welcome you back to the Real Talk with Zuby podcast. Now, on today's episode, we have got on a legendary rapper. He is one of the most underrated artists in the world, as far as I am concerned. Fantastic lyricist, crazy flow, worked with some of the dopest rappers in the game. And this is the one and only Ari, the Rugged Man. Welcome to the show, man.
What's up? I thought you was from England. You just lived there, but you're not from there?
I'm from here, but I grew up in Saudi Arabia, and I went to an American school.
Yeah, because you have no British accent. You talk like an American. Like, yeah. You said you was in England. I'm like, oh, he's going to get on here talking like Lennox Lewis or something. You know, hello, I am Zuby.
Yeah, it confuses everybody. It confuses Americans. It confuses British people. Just everybody.
You're one of those guys that just don't fit in nowhere here.
Yeah, exactly, man. So, man, I've just done a super brief intro there, but for our listeners who may not be familiar with who you are, let them know a little bit about you.
I'm just a hip-hop artist. I've been doing it for decades and decades. Before all your favorite rappers, I was there. Not all of them, you know. I wasn't there before, you know, Kumo D and Rakim, but, you know, I've been there for a long, long time, you know.
And how did you first get into rap? Because I know you've been rapping since childhood, right?
Yeah, I started around 11 years old. I was in Long Island, and all those guys were coming up. Rakim blew up, Eric Sermon in Paris, you know, Smith from EPMD, and Biz Markie. And, like, for some reason, in the mid to late 80s, it became this hotbed of, like, all the best rappers on the planet. Prince Paul was in Stetsasonic. It was like all the best rappers in the world. De La Soul was coming out of Amityville trying to do a whole different thing. Like, all the best rappers on the planet were coming out of there. And it was weird. You know, I don't know what it was. You know, Public Enemy, you know. But then, you know, you had to, you know, Rakim was from Long Island. So all of them. And then Big Daddy Kane was from Brooklyn, you know. But coming up in my area, in all the studios, all the greatest rappers on the planet were going to them. So I was a little kid. And I used to go to all the studios and try to meet people and see who was where. And you know, I seen everybody being the biggest rap on the planet. So I just followed their footsteps. Those were my like mentors and teachers, you know?
That's awesome, man. Were there any particular artists who you sort of modeled yourself after initially or were influenced by?
Oh, the whole Juice Crew. The Juice Crew was Big Daddy Kane and Biz Markie and Kool G Rap and Tragedy and Master Ace and Roxanne Shanté and Craig and MC Shan. Like, those are my favorite rappers, you know, those the whole entire Juice Crew, you know? Yeah. And that's also, Biz Markie was out in Long Island, and I was a little kid, and I'd go to his house and or go to his brother's Diamond Shell's house and play my demos for them and stuff. I'm like, yo, that's the actual Biz Markie right there on the couch. This is crazy. I'm with Biz Markie right now. You know, I was like 14, you know, so.
That's dope, man. And then, I mean, you got signed to, how old were you when you got signed fairly early, right?
Well, yeah, I was a teenager. I got like deal after deal. I was getting deals at like 16, 17, but by around 18 years old, I had like every label, like 19 labels. I mean, not 19 labels, nine labels from Jive to Priority to Def Jam to Warner Brothers to Mercury to every stinking one from that era. There was literally nine labels, and they all, every single one, Priority. I don't know if I'll repeat myself, but yeah. Oh, Tommy Boy.
Okay.
Every single one of them, yeah.
Yeah. And how did they find out about you? Because we're obviously going back now. So a lot of younger people now, right? Everything's online, right? And so we're talking way, way, way before internet, way before social media, all this. So, yeah.
You had to do footwork. You had to just be there, you know? So I was a little young kid. I carried a boom box around. I put my demo tape in it. And I'd go to, you know, I started in all the Long Island studios and battling in Long Island spots. Then I went to the city, battled, and then I'd go up into the Long Island, the New York City studios and have my tape playing, and everybody would be like, who the f*** is that? Who the f*** is that? And once the rappers gravitated towards you, then the labels would be like, why do all the rappers love this kid? Wow, you know, so then all the meetings started happening and everybody just was like, damn, this kid like out-rhymed so many people, and he's a little kid, a little white kid, you know? So, and this was a different era. Now there's, everybody's a white rapper. there wasn't really white rappers. There was maybe the Beastie Boys, who wasn't really known for lyrics, and I guess the only one out there that was known for lyrics was like, you know, MC Search type of guys, you know. So that was like the only lyrical group, probably, you know.
Gotcha. And then, I mean, it was a while between then and then you actually dropping your first album. So what happened in that? What happened in that meantime?
Well, like you said, it was before the internet, so. You know, I had big, I signed to Jive Records for like a $1.8 million situation. And I was a young, crazy teenage kid. And I, you know, I got sued and blackballed and banned and everything, you know, I was wilding out. And, you know, so that stopped me for a bit. And, you know, the album I had made, you know, we didn't get to put it out. And then, years and years later, in the late 90s, mid to late 90s, I started putting out 12-inch records and singles and popping again on my own because I didn't want to deal with the corporations. But then Priority and Capital came to me and they offered me situations. And, I was hustling hard, but there was no internet. So they said, hey, worst thing you do is go back to selling your little vinyls and come to us. So I tried my hand at that again, and I'm just a very outspoken person. So it's like when you're supposed to do a little bit more politics, I was a little bit more rah, 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 you know, threats, and, you know, I was a little bit more crazier back in them days, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's something that's really interesting because, you know, you use the word outspoken, and you most definitely are in your music, I think outside your music, on your social media, everything. And I mean, one thing I find really interesting with a lot of the stuff you talk about and a lot of your music is that, I don't know, so much of that is so relevant now, right? We're in this era of what people call cancel culture, where people feel sort of silenced, like people feel like they can't say anything, they can't voice any opinion, they can't say anything controversial or edgy or goes against the narrative. And it's like, from day one, you've always been able to do that and just not really care about it. So like, what are your thoughts on how things were then up until this weird position we're in now?
Well, it's the same world. You know, they were doing it in the sorry about the cursing.
That's all right.
I forgot. He's told me not to curse. You bleeped that out, right? I apologize. Yeah. I'm not used to not cursing.
Yeah, I hear you.
Ignorant New York guy. But cancel culture, it always existed. I mean, look at, you know, chasing Frankenstein with the pitchforks, you know, like that, it's based on witch hunts in Salem. It was always the church come and seize your property and kill the woman. You know, it's like it always existed. Let's cancel them. And if you're on the team of that person, or if you agree with that person, you're the devil, you're Satan, you're one of Satan's people. You know, that's what they did back in the day. And then, you know, same thing happened with record labels where like, oh, if you work with him, we won't work with you with this. And that, you know, it's like all cancel culture always existed. But now with the digital world, we have a culture where you can digitally, you know, put it on steroids, and one cancel could turn into 1,000 cancels, and 1,000 cancels turn into 3 million cancels, and boom, boom, boom. And I seen, like, I forgot who it was, but somebody defended Ella, who's the girl that they're canceling right now? Ellen DeGeneres.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And somebody, like, stuck up for her, and everyone, oh, cancel it. Like, they're canceling people for sticking up for somebody that's getting canceled. It's like, so you're not even allowed to defend a person who you might think is a decent person, or else they'll go after you and try to dig into some quote that you said years ago to try to cancel you, because it's like a really ugly movement at times, you know. Sometimes somebody should be canceled, you know, that is true, that's the world. But at the same time, when it's like, oh, this, you know, Ellen DeGeneres thing, I seen the thing yesterday where they said she fat shamed a kid in the 1970s. Like, shut that up. Like, stop. Like, come on. Like, it's just next level stupidity. And the thing is, you cannot defend somebody being canceled, because then you are just as bad as the person that they have in their mind, who might not even be that bad. You know, some of them are bad, but not every single person canceled is bad, you know? So, and the other thing is, every single person on the planet has done dirt, has done something bad, has said something stupid, has dressed up a certain way. Everybody did some stupid things in their life. Everybody. Yeah. It doesn't matter who it is, you know? So, and then everybody want to come and oh, it's time. We're on Twitter today. Let's just tear down the person we're supposed to tear down today. Meanwhile, like, let's go inside your closet. Let's go right inside your closet. You know, you ain't letting us in your closet, you know? But most of the people attacking them aren't enough of a name or a headline to get the cancel machine going, you know? So, you know, the cancel machine got to bring in clicks, you know? Yeah. if they're not clicking it, then they don't even care to cancel it half the time.
Yeah, for real. It's a weird thing. It's one of those things, I think, that's always been part of human collective psychology. And all that's happened is that the technology's advanced, right? So now something can happen in the U.S., something can happen in New York City, and within minutes, people in the U.K., people in Germany, people in Australia, all over, like, and are all on this thing and on this person, whereas previously, you just wouldn't have known, right? Unless something got into the news headlines, or it was something to do with a celebrity or whatever. Now it's just like any Tom, Dick, and Harry, any person who said anything.
Well, here's the thing, is back in the day, if the news media had something against you, or if you were making a movement that the news media didn't like, they could crush you.
Yeah.
And everybody would believe that news article, you know, but that was the threat, is that the people with power to write can crush you, you know, and get the voice out there. Now everybody has a voice. So sometimes you have real voices crushing really, really terrible people. Beep that out. I'm sorry. But you also get jealousy versus somebody that's doing better than you, or this and that, or, you know, like a lot of times, you know, you might have had a bad friendship with a producer, and then they're telling the world their side of a story that's not even close to it, and they're mentally ill, and then everyone's repeating what somebody said about you that isn't even a reality, but it's getting in, you know, forums, and people are saying this is what you like, and you're like, you know, it's not even close to accurate. But that's what happens a lot of times too, you know. But on the flip side too, sometimes when people do terrible things and it gets exposed, that's a plus too.
Yeah.
But it's just like anything though, this internet. It's like hip hop. You're getting exposed to some of the greatest lyricists that wouldn't have got exposure without the computer and that without that culture of pressing the button and sharing that word. Mm. But on the flip side of that is you also get nonstop false, fake, terrible art and, you know, talentless people getting stages and, you know, boom, boom, boom. So you know, there's two sides of it, you know, two sides of cancel culture as well, where you know, look, they're going too far. Ellen DeGeneres fat shamed the kid in the 70s.
1970.
Too far, you know, but then, you know, you're getting things that, you know, a politician might have said or did that the news isn't covering. You could get that online, you know, so there's two sides to it, you know?
Yeah, most definitely, man. I think it's the problem for me is when it's, I think a lot of it depends on intention as well, right? Because people use it in a really vindictive way. It's used as a weapon. And I think it's one thing if you've got a good intention and it's like, okay, this person is this person's a child molester or this person's like, you know, committed some horrible crime or something. It's like, that's one thing. But if it's just, oh, this person thinks differently from me, or I just want to harm this person, I just want to ruin this guy's career, I want to harm him psychologically, then that's where I'm just like, nah, that's screwed up, right? And
yeah, that's what happens too. And then the vindictive people will take the backs of people who are good-hearted.
Yeah.
And they'll smear somebody. And then the smear is being used for people who like want to do good in society. So they go, oh, you know, run with this smear that I was told. They don't know it's a smear. They just think that this is what they've heard and this is about that person. So, yeah. You know, it is what it is, though. You know, the world is just, there's a lot of vindictive movement in that culture. Mm. You know, there's a lot of it. A lot of people who are angry at you go, oh, now I could get you to lose your job. That's true. That does happen in the world, you know?
Yeah.
So I mean, especially if you digitally just put any information, like I'll be on the internet and I'll see like, you know, husbands and wives fighting about, you know, like an artist, I don't want to name drop it, but like his wife was on the internet talking about like, oh, he put hands on me, you know, and everyone's like, oh, you know,
oh, geez,
he's a terrible person. But then he showed all the footage of the entire night and it was like her chasing him down the street, calling his daughter stupid and acting like, your daughter's stupid. She doesn't know how to multiply. He's like, yo, get away from me and my daughter. Leave us alone. And he was trying to escape the whole night.
Yeah.
And then she went on and like was starting spreading. Like, it's like, you know, the whole world don't need to see like little parts of your world and then believe, you know, it's crazy, you know?
Yeah, that's nuts, man. I mean, what are your thoughts on, you touched a little bit on hip hop and rappers now and how the internet has brought to light some of the greatest lyricists, but also a lot of stuff that you don't think, you're not feeling and you don't think is good. So, I mean, hip hop has changed a lot since you started rapping. I mean, hip hop has changed very, very significantly. What are your thoughts on where it is right now? Are you?
Well, there's all kinds of hip hop now. There's a pop world of pop music. It doesn't have to be competitive because it's not meant for that. They had that in the era of Vanilla Ice and MC Hammer. They weren't like really dope lyrical guys, but they had their little crossover pop fan base. And I look at, you know, but meanwhile, most people, you know, that listened to hip hop was checking out KRS-One and X-Clan and Poor Righteous Teachers and you know, Grand Poolba and Brand Nubian and like, they was listening to that when Vanilla Ice and Hammer was on the pop stage, you know? Mm. So today you got a lot of really bad celebrity rap, you know? That's a lot of what's going on, celebrity rap. Whoever gets the clicks, it's not about the culture. It's about, you know, the kid rats on people, so it's a big headline, and then his video drops and gets more views than everybody. But nobody really cares about the music or the song. Mm. They're just talking about the popular headline. So that's pop culture. So if you're like, oh, hip hop's dead because you see pop culture and people that don't even know nothing about the culture listening to some BS, that doesn't mean the culture's dead. You got to look into the culture, but you're looking for it on who gets the most hits, who gets the most views, who's talked about the most. That's not what culture ever has been in any culture. That's not culture. Yeah. You know, who gets the most views? You know, that's not culture. You know, a painting, you know, most of the greatest artists in history died broke. And then, you know, finally somebody seen a picture and it worked out for them after they were dead a lot of times, you know? Mm. So, it's not about who's the popular, you know, person in high school. That's what they're trying to make, you know, most pop music. And you know, they it's whatever's easiest to market to the masses. And hip hop culture isn't for the masses. You know, it's not, you know, that's not what it is. It's it's for stage shows. It's for rocking. It's for making good music for people who appreciate the craft of hip hop. But, you know, making bubblegum stuff, that's a totally different ball game. So I can't be offended by that or oh my God, you know, it is what it is, you know?
Yeah, I get you. I mean, it's a funny thing. I mean, cause what you said there is interesting. Cause you said hip hop isn't for, it's not for the mainstream and it's not for everything, but at the same time, it's probably, you know, it is one of the most popular genres of music worldwide. It's the most streamed genre of music. And I think what's tricky with hip hop is it's almost like that word in itself, it's morphed to mean so many different things. So if you're talking about sort of more like purist lyrical hip hop and the, you know, the kind of stuff you create, then that's almost, it's got the same name as a lot of the pop and mainstream stuff and what people are hearing on the radio or whatever. And it's weird because a lot of times, especially someone who's not really into hip hop, but even those who are, if they say the word hip hop, their brain goes to the mainstream stuff and the radio and whatever's popping in the clubs and whatever. And it's not really going to what you could call, I guess, more the essence of traditional hip hop.
Yeah. I'm talking about the culture.
Yeah.
The culture, the hip hop culture isn't meant to be, you know, in Disney every second of the day. You know, it's not meant for the Troll movie or, you know, Troll World Tour. You know, that's more Cyndi Lauper, girls just want to have fun, you know? So it's a different, two different universes, you know?
Yeah.
So you can't let that culture, that pop culture affect hip hop culture. It's two different things. If you're a hip hop artist, you know, you do what you do, you know?
Yeah. When you yourself say hip hop culture, what does that mean to you?
Well, competition, okay. MCing, being great at MCing, great at songwriting, versatilities and flows, originality, and show stopping. You know, get on the stage and really know how to, you know, MC, call and response, you know, DJing, MCing, you know, it's all part of that culture where it's a competition. Mm. It's a blood sport to many, you know. But Kool Moe Dee he was out for your head. He wanted to take your head off, you know. Big Daddy Kane, you know, those guys wanted to take your head off. Now, that's the culture that I came from the beginning of it, before there was record making. That's what I studied. Like when it was out there, people were taping, you know, live shows, and then the tapes would get made and circulate. You know, they weren't even, nobody cared about even making records in the beginning of hip hop. That was new school. That was like later in the 80s they started, you know. So when you research all of that stuff and you see what the actual, background of it all is, it's just a little bit different. And the more money that gets pumped into any culture, the more it gets watered down and diluted and watered down and diluted and watered down. That's what happens. So in the 90s, tons of money and so much money kept getting poured into it. So it turned into this and that, you know. But it's the same thing where the argument where Scorsese versus Marvel superheroes, you know, Scorsese said, oh, that's not cinema. But yeah, of course it's cinema. But is it cinema? Is it Fellini? Is it Kubrick? Is it, you know, the guys Scorsese loves, like, you know, the Godards and Truffauts and Kurosawas. No, it's not. It's not anywhere near that artistic level. Marvel comic movies are nowhere near what Scorsese's talking about artistically. Mm-hmm. But when he says it's not cinema, it is cinema. You know, the bubblegum, stupid, same movie over and over with special effects, but it's not, it's two different cultures, you know?
Yeah, I hear you, man. I mean, do you find it, like, honestly, do you find yourself getting frustrated at all, given, I mean, when I did introduce you, I said that I think you're one of the most underrated rappers out there, period. And I mean that genuinely. I'm not trying to gas you up. So do you sometimes find it frustrating at all when it's like, not just for yourself, but you've got so many artists, rappers, MCs who are like, just on a different echelon, right, in terms of talent and ability and actual rapping skills and hip-hop MCing skills, and they're so greatly overlooked by, you know, such a large percentage of the population, And then when other when people are thinking hip hop and rap, their brain is automatically thinking of, you know, you've got some artists who are mainstream who are really dope and really talented. But let's be honest, there's a lot of stuff that's out there which is just like some of it is terrible, right? The lyrics almost are not. I mean, we're at this weird point where people make fun of the fact that some artists are lyrical. It's almost like being lyrical is now something to be laughed at or to be shunned or something like that.
That's the dumbed down of society. Yeah. You know, they do that with anything. If you don't go with the narrative or the sound that is being spoon fed to you, then they have to, you know, diss it. And they do that to everything, though. It's a weird thing about this generation, because when hip hop started, all the great DJs, all the great MCs went to the past and they studied all the greats. And that's what they did. And they dug through the record collections and they learned music. Now it's this weird thing where, like, a lot, not all of them, there's some young cats that like know hip hop in and out, and they study the greats and they check out the past and they check out the future. They check it all out. But a lot of like people, it's such a fast money making thing for them. So they don't want to learn the craft. They don't want to learn how to do it. I made some quick money. I'm good. It's all about the money. So, you know, and that's been, you know, kind of shoved down their throat, the Money Mayweather type of vibe, you know, the hip hop community of throwing the dollar bills at the strip club. And, you know, craft is secondary to them, you know, or not even secondary, like 10th or 11th or 12th on the list.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
So, that, you know, that's a fact. So, you know, they got to, they don't got to study. They can do whatever they want in life, you know, but it just is a different era where, like, now people kind of like look at things that were before them as a threat. Like, if they don't know it, it's dumb. That's old head stuff. That's this. But that's never like, if you look at film history, none of the great filmmakers would ever be like, that's old head stuff. They'd be like, no, those are the films I studied. You know, I watched Citizen Kane. I watched, you know, Hitchcock's Five Best, you know, last week alone, you know, like, that's what they do. But it's a new era where it's like, or like musicians study the great guitarist to play the guitar. They don't do that anymore. You know, a lot of cases, that's not every case, but a lot of hip hop is dumbed down, simplify, couple different words that could keep a memorable melody in the head and, you know, shoot it out to the world. And you know, it's a new era.
Yeah, it is.
It's not for me. It's not for a lot of people. But to me, I really believe that those kind of records are very trendy. Mm-hmm. And those aren't the kind of records that, 30, 40 years from now, they'll be doing tours on, or people will give anything about, you know, where, like, you know, Curtis Blow is still, you know, in Europe rocking. Well, not with coronavirus, but before that, you know, all these guys, you know, Public Enemy still doing stadium shows. Ice-T's out there still rocking big, you know, giant festivals, 100,000 people. So I don't think the big pop record in the digital age of Twitter and TikTok that got the most TikTok hits, I don't think those records are going to be worth anything in 10 years or 20 years or 30 years or 40 years. But you know, great music stays relevant and keeps, you know, stays alive for years and years. When I was a 11, 12 year old boy and I Ain't No Joke by Rakim, you didn't know, 30 years from now, they're going to be blasting that all over the world still. And, you know, if you play it now, it's still going to rock a club. You didn't know that, but you know, Rakim's still worldwide. Like, his music is worldwide. You go to a hip hop show and they're playing Gangstar records, you know, in Poland, you know?
I was actually going to say, I mean, as someone who myself has performed in a few different European countries, and it's interesting. I think that when it comes to the sort of more traditional hip hop or hardcore hip hop or classic hip hop, it seems like on the European continent, they seem to appreciate that more than they do in the U.S. Like, I know the U.S. is obviously a big place, so you're going to have pockets where that's still very popular.
No, you're right. Yeah. But it's not just Europe continent. It's Australia respects it more. Japan, you know, Asian, you know, South America, which I haven't been to, but I know, like, Cyprus and Sick Jack and them guys, you know. All over the world.
Yeah.
But America is a very, very And I say it all the time. There's such following ass trend. This is what's getting a lot of recognition right now. Like they follow trends so ridiculously. They're so small in so many ways that that's the way it goes. The rest of the world will sink in and look at art. Where you know, U.S. it's about, oh, what's the numbers? What's popular? Oh, how many IG views does it have? You know, this or IG hits or followers. It's like, it's just a weird, you know. And you know, I'm not trying to get on that anti-capitalism stuff, but it's like, you know, there's so much programming done in like the biggest capitalist nation in the world, like that. You know, this is what you get. This is what you get. We're Americans and we got the biggest and the most popular. And you know, so if something's not as popular there, they think that that's quality. But yeah, the rest of the world isn't as brainwashed like that. Obviously, there's also, like, you're in England, there's brainwashed kids that will listen to the most popular album, you know. But like my album dropped and went number 3 on the British charts, you know.
Congrats.
When it came out. You know, number 3, you know, I think I forgot who I was behind, but it was number 3 in the whole country.
That's dope.
Where United States, we did good on the sales. I think we did 23 or something on the best selling records, but on the pop chart, all of this stuff, we didn't, they don't care in America about us, you know. They care about, you know, whatever's the popping, you know, coochie pop.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, it's weird for me because, like, I mean, when I was in my teens, that would have been sort of in the early to, you know, I remember like in the, say, the early thousands, especially, I remember that era. And it's really funny because I remember at that time, say when I was like 15 or 16 years old, there were certain artists that my friends liked or who were popular or whatever, who I thought were like kind of whack. Right. Because I thought lyrically, I thought they were really subpar. And what's fascinating is if I listen to those artists now, they sound really advanced. Like they, like the artists who I thought were kind of like lyrically poor in the early 2000s. And when I now listen to them, I'm like, whoa, this is like a lot more advanced than.
Yeah, what's happened? Yeah, it's the dumbing down of the culture. Yeah. It's the diluting and watering down of the culture and making it so 5-year-old kids could listen to it and 70-year-old. You know, white kids, white lawyers, rich people could listen to it. Like it tries to be like a Disney anthem, you know, even if it's pornographic, it's simplified, it's trying to be a simple, you know, thing for people that don't care about rap will listen to, you know, and that's what it becomes. So yeah. So the 2000s were dumbed down compared to the 1990s, you know, and then a lot of people believe 1990s was the peak. But I think that 80s was even more innovative because that's when it kept reinventing itself. Every year, hip hop kept reinventing itself over and over again. What the 90s was, which was amazing, but it was kind of like the groundwork was put together, you know, but what Nas did, Rakim already did that, you know, and Kool G Rap already did that. You know what I mean? That groundwork already been done. With the greatest groups in the 90s, they weren't reinventing. They were just being really great at the craft that was already constructed. You know, when you know, Run DMC came out, it was something brand like, whoa, we never saw this type of energy in a stage rocking. And that started influencing everything. And then a year later it was this. And then a year later, Rakim with the slow flow and the calm on the mic, you know, and Melly Mel was painting street pictures. It was like the 80s every year was like this brand new way to recreate the culture, where in the 90s I really believe that it was like they already knew, you know. The one thing you could give to the 90s though was, I guess, groups like from other regions started becoming lyrical, because in the 80s the other regions weren't lyrical yet, you know, like Cali didn't have nobody really lyrical, you know, the South didn't really have nobody really lyrical. Maybe there's one a guy or something, but you know, in the 80s, the late 80s, they had like Cube was their lyrical guy. But like in the 90s, you know, late 80s, I'm talking though, too. Okay. Now, you know, DOC was a lyrical guy from, I think, Atlanta. So that was late 80s. That was what, 16, 17 years after 15 years rap already been going on. It took them so many years. But then in the 90s, you got like different flows coming out of like an Outkast type of guy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Source would be like, ah, boo, because they wanted New York. But like, you know, there was different, the 90s, that's the only, but as far as the people that are considered the best of the 90s, like Rakim, Tupac and Big and Nas and Jay, they were all doing things that were already done before them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They really were. But they were doing it in an incredible, you know, like Pac is known for his emotional detail of, you know, bringing you into his story and his world and, you know, having his message. So I'm not saying it was done, you know, you understand what I'm trying to say though.
Yeah, yeah.
There was no reinvention. It was just a good way to do something that was done already. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's how I feel. And a lot of people might listen to it. Oh, he don't know what he's talking about. F him. Yeah. But you know, I'm just breaking it down the way I see it, you know?
Yeah, no, I think in the late 90s and the early thousands, I think early to mid thousands, I think people took sort of templates that had already been created, and I think they mastered them. And I think you also had the commercial peak as well. So that's when more money was coming in and people were selling huge, you know, artists were going diamond. People were selling huge amounts of albums. But it wasn't yet at the stage where, because I was thinking this, I think one thing that's actually been a big factor, or two, I think number one is the fact that artist development just isn't a thing anymore. Like the artist is supposed to totally develop themselves and no one is interested in investing in something that's not already at a stage where it kind of doesn't really need it. And then also, I think the fact that people have moved so far away from albums, because now you've got streaming and stuff like that. First you had downloading, then you had streaming. So the album as a format became less important, really. And I think that's a big shame. Like, I love listening to albums. And I think now so many artists, like, it makes more sense with things like Spotify and whatever to just put out random singles than it does.
Yeah, I understand that too, because, you know, I'm an old school artist. So I worked on putting together this perfect album that all my fans will love. And then I could tour off this perfect album. But the thing is, yes, the music as a whole gets heard less.
Yeah.
Of course, if Chris Webby, you know, the young kid, Chris Webby,
mm-hmm.
I guess he's not young anymore, but you know, I look at him like young, but he's probably in his 30s now. Jesus, I don't know how old he is. Chris Webby.
Sure.
He had said that you release a song that's unreleased, put a video out, put it on Spotify, and it spikes and every, because that's your new joint, you know? And that's how he said he releases an album. He'll throw another one unreleased. He releases almost every song off an album
mm-hmm.
before the album even drops.
Yeah.
And then it just gets big spikes and all the Spotify view, everything's huge. And then you drop the album and everyone's kind of disappointed in the album at first, like, hey, that's you know, I heard all of that stuff. Why don't you drop it out? You know, but he said, but then 6 months down the line, they have the album. They forgot that they had all the songs ahead of time, and that's his album, you know? And I understand that. And there's the kid who rocks with Nova, Tom McDonald, you know who he
is? Oh, yeah, yeah. Tom McDonald's dope, yeah.
He's very controversial. So I know mm-hmm. people who think he's the worst, and I, you know, think he's terrible. And I see people who really, really, you know, love everything he does. He speaks his own mind. He does what he wants to do. But Nova directs all his videos and comes in with the creative stuff too. So it's like a little team. But like Tom, he'll release a damn song every week with a brand new video. Boom, ba boom, ba boom, ba boom. So when you're knocking them in the head with content, you know, your channels are blowing up, your views are blowing up. Where the old school way of releasing is just really, you know, memorable, you know, he's dropping two albums this week, I think, you know, like you know, flooding the market, but they keep buying and buying and buying and this and that. Where me, I come from an era where the radio will play No Half Stepping by Kane, then they'll press up the 12-inch, then the album will come out and you had it on a tape and you played that one song a million times and memorized every word, and the songs are so special. Now, decades later, if you put the song on, it's still like the most moving, greatest hip hop song I ever heard. And, you know, cause I got to live with it and appreciate it and love it. And it's the same thing where the mother of my kids, she thinks that I ruin Christmas because I have my American mentality where I just throw a million toys under the Christmas tree. Yeah, let them open up a million toys. It's Christmas. What are you kidding me? That's the best part. Even more important than the toys is, you know, the actual toy is opening the toys. So she's like, yo, the kids, don't, you know, you know, they're opening everything up, not even caring what any of the stuff that they're getting is. You know what I mean? So it's almost, so she wants to give them like 3 or 4 nice things that they'll really cherish and like. Mm-hmm. And I'm the flamboyant daddy with, look, you got 5 million boxes of toys. It's Christmas, you know? So it's kind of like, that's kind of the new school mentality. Like, here's 2 albums, here's 2 albums today. Here's one record, another video next week, video. And that works. And mm-hmm. and the way I do it with my kids works too. The kids are having the greatest time of their life opening 5 million presents. But they're not, like, she's right too, is that they might not remember that present, or this one might be under the couch. They won't even notice it's missing. You know, where like if you get them 4 or 5 really cool things or 3 cool things, they'll cherish, they'll probably remember that damn toy that they got, you know, in 20 years. My cousin, I was 6, 7 years old. He bought me a Rodan for my birthday. I was in elementary school. He showed up to my school with and they called me to the office. I was like, what do I do? I'm in trouble. And my cousin was there and he said, hey, I bought you a Rodan doll, you know, from Godzilla with
Godzilla,
the wings.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, look, I'm in my 40s talking about the damn Rodan doll I got when I was 8 years old,
yeah.
Because it was special, you know? So that's like that Ain't No Half-Stepping song or You Gots to Chill by EPMD, Strictly Business album. You know, it's like those are special to us. We have those songs in our hearts for life because we got to live with them and study them and memorize them and rock with them and, you know, not be like, well, what are they doing now? What's next? What's next? What's next? What's next? What's next? What's next? No, we don't care what's next. We're listening to this classic right now, you know? Mm. So the way they do it isn't the wrong way. The way they do it, smothering the world with content is a way to make a lot of money and do very well for yourself.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just from a different school, you know?
Yeah, most definitely, man. I mean, in terms of your music itself, like it's super diverse and super versatile. I mean, you, not just in terms of like the rapping itself, but in terms of the content, I mean, it ranges from stuff that's, yeah, you know, you've got some tracks which are very, very sort of heartfelt. And then you've got stuff where you're just wilding out, saying all kinds of crazy stuff that's going to offend everybody regardless.
Horrible stuff that we're not allowed to say on your show.
Yeah, yeah. So like...
Wait, what's your purpose of not cursing on the show? Is this like a religious show or something? I'm not really up on your politics. Did you know that?
Yeah, no, that's okay, man. That's okay. So I don't cuss myself. I don't cuss in my music. I don't cuss outside of it. And with this podcast specifically, I guess that leans on from that, but also like a lot of people, like a lot of young people listen to it and stuff. So I just try to keep it.
You're like Ben Shapiro. You hate the kids hearing curse words and stuff.
I'm not a fan of it, man. And you know, like I've got my principles. Like I don't cuss myself. Like I don't put cussing in like none of my songs, none of my albums have cussing and stuff. So it's kind of like, let me keep that all the way. Yeah.
Each personality to each its own. That's what free speech and free, you know, to do the art you want to do. That's what it's about.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, freedom to, you know, give the world what you feel is art, you know?
Exactly, man. So I'm like a super pro free speech advocate. And obviously it's not so like I can say horrible stuff. Like I'm like, man, I don't even cuss, but I will defend to the death, like people's right to say pretty much whatever, and I'll listen to it, but I won't necessarily repeat it. But you know, art is art.
That's dope. Yeah, that's how it should be. It's like, I don't like that, that's terrible. But somebody else will like it, you know? It's like, you know, we come from that era of the 80s where I was, you know, a hip-hop guy. They were trying to put, you know, ban all the rap music, trying to ban all the records, you know. Gore and horror films, Siskel and Ebert would be on TV. Oh, these movies aren't real movies, you know, and they were the greatest thing in the world to most of us, you know. Yeah. And you lived in England, who had the worst, you know, banning of horror films. They had that list. Video Nasties.
Yeah, that's the one.
Video Nasties. They used to, oh, this is banned and this is going to cause kids to kill people. And, mm-hmm. You know, and then you had that murder case out there where they tried to blame Chucky, that some kids killed a kid.
Yes.
In England. It was a famous story, and they ended up like raping him and doing some horrible things to this kid.
Yeah.
And they tried to blame it on Chucky from Child's Play.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think it's a little bit more deeper than that, guys.
Most certainly. Yeah. No, if music and video games and movies were like the, you know, were the cause of all this stuff, I think the world would look very, very different, given that, you know, Eminem's what, the highest selling rapper, GTA is the highest selling video game, so on and so forth. Like, we'd all be in a lot of trouble if that were the case.
And you know, historically, the world has been violent.
Oh, and geez.
Horrible, and you know, and all these governments all over the world murdering people. I don't think that they're listening to Eminem and playing that video game. Like, let's kill everyone now. The biggest murderers on the planet probably ain't listening to Eminem and playing the video game you just said. You know.
Yeah, most definitely, man. What are your thoughts on that, though? Because it's a question I get a lot, especially as, like, you know, an artist who tries to put out positive content and doesn't curse. I get asked all the time about, you know, number one, what do I think about some of the messaging in hip hop and rap music and music in general? And two, what if any responsibility do rappers and perhaps other entertainers potentially have? What are your own thoughts on that?
Entertainers do not have any responsibility to protect you. You know, entertainers do not have that responsibility. They're entertaining people. It's entertainment. Quentin Tarantino does not have, you know, oh, he shot up chopped the cop's ear off, or you know, they entertainers, you know, and they go, well, you know, people listen to the music. Yeah, no ish. And back in the 80s, they blamed it on Dungeons and Dragons. And then there was a Satan worshiper in my neighborhood when I was a kid. He was an older kid. And he was a few towns over, Ricky Castle. And he told the kid, hey, say you love Satan. And the kid wouldn't say it. So he stabbed the kid to death.
Whoa.
And I think he had a Motley Crue shirt on, or a Def Leppard shirt, or AC/DC. No, he had an AC/DC shirt on. And then the whole news blamed it on heavy metal made this kid kill, you know, heavy metal. You know, I don't think you're going to listen to AC/DC and be like, let me be a Satan worshiper and stab a kid. You know, it's like, you're gonna, you know, that's in you, that's not in the music, that was in you. So you know, the blaming of art on sick people is so lame and so petty and so stupid. And when people do it, it's like, come on, man, you know, get over yourself. It's like, so yeah, I'm an advocate for say what you want, do what you want, be who you want, say the foulest, horrible stuff, or do a political position that nobody agrees with in your song, or do what you say. Don't curse in the song. You know, I don't feel that. That's the, you know, but everybody should be allowed to look at the shirt I got on, Phantasm. Yeah. I used to watch this 6-7 years old. The girl had nice breasts, and she was stabbed the guy in the graveyard, and then like chopped this guy's finger off, and yellow stuff is squirting out, and you know, turns into a bug and is flying around the house, and metal balls are flying in people's head, and blood's flying out. And I mean, that's, you know, and look, all these years later, I'm wearing it there. Hey, Phantasm, you know, it's like, you know, I didn't go, this movie didn't make me go build a metal ball and spike it into people's heads.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting one.
Days of Michelangelo, they were doing it. It was like, they take Michelangelo's beautiful art and paint clothing on it. Like, let me paint a piece of a pant. So like all this great, amazing art is all, well, let's chop the nudity off of the statue. It's been going on since the beginning of time. People who think that they're the superior mind that can tell the world what's good for them, but they can see it because they can censor it. They're strong enough. It's not going to damage their mind, but it's going to damage everyone else's that sees it. It's like just hypocritical and pompous, and you know, you're going to sit on your superior chair and tell the world what they're able or allowed to hear or say, because it's all dangerous for everybody. And in the history of cinema, they've been doing that. You know, the history of art, movies, cinema, all, they've been doing it forever. There's this group of people who believe they're the smart ones that should dictate what the people are allowed to see and what they shouldn't be allowed to see, you know?
And it's always this idea that of like sort of saving people from themselves, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, if I don't stop them from seeing this, they're like, people are mindless drones. And if they just see this thing or they hear this thing, they're going to automatically go out and repeat it or parrot it or whatever. And it's like, no, you know, if someone is going to do that, that's someone who already is messed up, right? That's someone who already
crazy.
Yeah.
People. Yeah. Somebody's going to do something insane. It's not because they listen to a Tupac song, you know, it's because they're a crazy person and they're doing crazy things because they're crazy. Yeah. It has nothing to do with, well, I listened to rap song and then, you know what I mean? But they always did that. Like I said, Tip of Gore, you know, Al Gore, you know, Al Gore was, you know, he was the vice president, but he come from the Ku Klux Klan. He was, his father was the Ku Klux Klan. His family was the Ku Klux Klan. And then his wife was a book burner. She wanted to stop everything from being heard musically. I remember those days of watching that stuff and Tip of Gore, oh, these terrible people, you know.
That was kind of early to mid 90s, wasn't it? When that was the 80s. Okay.
Yeah. It was definitely the 80s. And you know who the saviors of the time was John Denver. You know who he was?
John Denver. The name rings
a
bell.
Like this old folk singer. He was in the movie Oh God, and he was like the friendly guy. And he sang with the Muppets, you know.
Okay.
You know, he sang love songs. And nice, friendly hippie.
Yeah.
And he was one of the main ones to speak out against. You know, he would never make a record like any of the stuff they were. He would never make a record like an Ice-T or any of the Cop Killer. But he was defending the hell out of people having the right to say it. And Dee Snider from Twisted Sister, he was on that panel fighting for the free rights. And Frank Zappa and John Denver, rest in peace. Frank Zappa, rest in peace. Dee Snider, out of the three of them, is the only one still living. Yeah.
That's super interesting, man. What was I going to say? There's something, you know what? I was listening to one of your tracks the other day, and there was a lyric in there that actually really hit me, just partly because of the timing. Because I don't want to get too political on this one, but of course, last week and in the past couple of months, right, you had, of course, you got Joe Biden running for president right now. And firstly, we had his, if you don't vote for me, you ain't black comment. And then last week he had his comment about, you know, black people being a monolith and not having diverse thinking, et cetera.
Yeah,
and you had a song, I think, on your 2014 album or 2013 album, where you said something about, like, if you want to know a real racist, look at Joe Biden or something. And it just hit me and I was like, oh, snap. Like
2013. Yeah. So here's the thing I've been talking trash about Biden forever because all his policies was racist. Everything that comes out of his mouth is racist and disgusting.
Yeah.
But now there's the Trump thing. So if you talk bad about Biden, they'll say, oh, that's because you like Trump. Like, I don't like Trump. I think Trump is trash. But, you know, it's like they're so blinded because Trump is such a horrible, you know, they want to get rid of him so bad that they'll allow Biden to say every racist thing of all time. And they'll allow him to hide and not even speak because they know when he talks, he's going to say the worst things ever. And he's terrible. And that's when Biden was vice president. That's what they did. Every time they let him out for half a second, he shoved his foot in his mouth. So they said, look, Obama's a great speaker. Whether you agree with his politics or not, he was a great speaker. You know, he was, you know, motivational. He'll, you know, sell his fan base. He was great at that. So they said, Biden, just shut up, stay in the back and never talk.
Yeah.
Like Biden rarely ever talked when Obama was president because he had a real speaker, Obama. You know, I'm not saying he was a truth speaker, but he was a speaker that knew how to tell those, spin those Democrat things to the Democrats, and people believed and ate it up. But the problem now is that the Democrats always, you know, they destroy their own, they destroy anything that's not them.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, not their little family. So they pushed up, they always do the same thing they did to Sanders last time, how was sending out ugly pictures of him to media. He's on the beach, shirtless, unflattering. They like conspired to make, you know, Biden, you know, they conspired to make sure Hillary got the thing. And then when the WikiLeaks was leaked and it was real, like, yo, they really did. They were giving Hillary the questions ahead of time. All of that stuff, they said, you know, it's okay because Trump's terrible.
Yeah, yeah.
So they got away with it that time, but then you figure they'll learn from it. You know, because we all knew Hillary was going to be Trump. At least I thought so, and most of the world thought so, you know. Mm. So they figured, why even you know, campaign. Just let Trump open his mouth. He says such stupid things, he'll lose. That's what they did. And they also, like, you know, from those emails, they propped him up. It was him. And was it Herman Cain? Or it was like a couple of the guys, there was three people that they listed, that these are the easy to beat guys that the media should prop up. Mm-hmm. And they went to the media and helped prop these guys up. And Trump got billions of dollars in free press. And they created this idiot that doesn't belong in office. They created that. So and now it's 2020, and now we're stuck again with Biden, a guy who they won't even let out the house to talk, because they know every single time he talks, he's going to say something really ridiculously stupid. Yep. Why couldn't they find like a decent human being, somebody who could speak, someone who's strong, somebody who has a real point of view? They didn't want that. Yeah. You know, I was getting ish for it before, but Tulsi Gabbard on a Democrat ticket, I thought she was great. Mm-hmm. I thought she would have body slammed Biden. I thought she would have body slammed Trump easy. I thought she would have ate them up in debates. Like you let them two talk. You got one intelligent woman and one, two buffoons, two brain dead old men who could barely form, you know, reasonable thinking sentences. It's like, but that's what America has, Biden and Trump. Yeah, so that's
it's fascinating. It does amaze me. Like
Joe Jergensen, they won't let her debate.
Okay, she's the libertarian candidate, right?
But you know, let her speak. But now they want the two-party system forever. And they shame you if you don't agree with that we should have a two-party system. But nobody's ever happy.
Yeah.
No one's ever happy with the two-party system. No one's ever happy. And they shame you if you say, I'm going to go third party. I'm going to vote for somebody who I actually kind of like, rather than these two horrible, horrible, horrible choices. And then they go, oh, you know, you drew your vote away to the person that I don't like. Well, you're a piece of garbage, you know, and they'll try to destroy you. You know, they try to destroy everybody that tries to go third party because they're saying you're the one that's destroying this election. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, if you know how many people don't vote?
Yeah.
You know, every election. Majority. Imagine if you get all these young minds, a strong, well-spoken candidate that the public can believe in. Nobody believes in Biden. Nobody, well, some people believe in Trump. So that's the sad part. But, you know, you get a strong candidate, though, that's well-spoken and all these issues in America, they speak on all these issues and find solutions for all these issues or try to speak of solutions for all these issues. And the young youth gets behind them and says, you know, I'm not with this old wrinkly Biden. I'm not with this racist weirdo Trump. I'm not with these guys. We're going to all get behind this candidate. But the media pushes that there's and you know, the blue check marks on Twitter pushes. Oh, hey, you can't be a third party.
Oh,
but if everybody didn't, but if people stopped believing that you couldn't have a third party, we could have a third party and we could get them elected. We have the power to do that. But the big machines will not let the American mental believe it. They won't let the people believe it. And the people won't just get behind somebody, you know? And we just need a powerful person to we need somebody, but I don't know.
Yeah.
America is America. Year after year, it's going to be America. So I don't know.
Yeah, it's a funny thing. You know, I a lot of people don't like it when I say this, but sometimes I say I think people end up with the leader they deserve. And, you know, like people really, really, really hate it when I say that. But I'm kind of like, well, you know, who creates the system? Who votes? Who runs the media? Like, yeah, sure, these things all have influence. And I understand the system's not perfect. But like you were saying, if all these people are seeing, okay, we want another option, and then they were to just, you know, it's democratic, right? You can vote for another option. Sure, the media may not be with you and certain, you know, people may not be with you.
We have the internet now. If each person comes up with their own internet campaign, and you got millions of people all over America putting their own campaign. Of course, Google and them are going to try to block it. Yeah. but if you got millions of them swarming them, and all in the streets, you know, speaking of somebody that could lead the country correctly, somebody stand up and be that person. Somebody out there got to be that person.
Yeah, no, it's interesting because I mean, a lot of that was the appeal of Trump in itself. And, you know, that's something I do find in whether or not people like him or his policies or whatever. That is something I do find inspiring. The fact that this guy's not a politician and the media was totally, totally against this guy. Like you said, he wasn't supposed to win, right? Hillary was supposed to be the chosen one. And the fact that he did it to me, that was like a, whoa, okay, that's kind of a watershed as far as I'm concerned. No, like, that does show someone can.
There is something true in what you're saying. The problem with it is that Trump is a narcissist.
Oh, certainly.
Trump cares more about what people think about him than what he really, you know, than actually doing something, you know. And then he's racist and ignorant half the time. So somebody who, you know, so now they got somebody out of the system, supposedly, and it's this buffoon idiot. So now, you know, this is what people think. If you don't go with our system, you're going to get this guy, you know, so you're kind of right that he did beat this system of he beat the corrupt Democrat system that but they shot themselves in the foot. You know, they by conspiring and all of that stuff and lying constantly. And that's the other thing. The Democrats create so many lies that when Trump is lying and the Democrats call him on the lies, no one believes that he's lying in that fan base because the Democrats always lying about Trump.
Yeah.
So when he's doing horrible things, they're no. He's Trump. You'll say bad things about him no matter what he does. And then it's like, yeah, but you're just brainwashed. Trump is right. You know, like so they get this follow the leader mentality of Trump and ignore everything they say, and they keep doing it. And then they'll hype up that Russia thing for 4 straight years. Oh, Russia. So people go like, I'm not listening to you about Russia anymore. Yeah. And then start it again now.
Yeah.
And now they're doing, oh, Russia again.
Nancy Ukraine for
Russia. And then the other side going, oh, China, Russia. But it's like, yo, like nobody wants to hear that.
Yeah.
Like you're putting this in the brain of impressionable people. I know what you're doing. But like enlightened people are seeing through. Russia versus China is running America. Stop it. Stop fear mongering. Stop the fear mongering. You know, we went to Vietnam because communism was going to get it. You know, it's what that's our history is fear mongering you into, you know, socialism is going to get you. Communism is going to get you. This is going to get you. Everybody's going to kill you. You know, that's the world we live in is fear. And they use that. And the bad Russians, you know, the bad Chinese are killing everybody. Oh, look, we got this China Muslim camp in China. Look what they're doing to Muslims. Like, stop. You don't even care what they're doing to Muslims in your own country. You don't care. So stop acting like you care. You know, it's just, it's silliness, man.
Yeah. It's
there was some other point I was making and I went into all of that. I forgot what the point was. Yeah, but like Trump, you know, it's like he's so ridiculous. He's like a old white guy that has no concept of reality. Like he'll go all pro police. He'll do them. You know, remember when he was talking about, oh, bang their heads against the police car when you put them in the police car. Like, what are you talking about? But then when people started, you know, and the George Floyd thing, of course, they'll use any tragedy to fearmonger Americans, no matter what it is, whether it's COVID, whether it's school shooters, whether it's George Floyd, we know that, right? Yeah. But the internet got to see a snuff film. They got to see the whole world got to see them step on this man's neck for 10 minutes. There's no, there was no media manipulation. We got to see it. People were sharing it before it hit the media. We were all, whoa, oh my God. We were all horrified by an image. And then Trump goes on the internet and shows a clip of like a black guy beating up a guy in like Walmart or like Sears or something. Like a black guy like beat up like somebody that worked at the store. Just a random white guy.
I don't think
he's
I
like,
saw
well, why isn't this all over the media? It's like,
okay. But this one was a little bit later. Right?
Like, why would that be all over the media? Yeah. It happens every day. Somebody gets beat up in a freaking store. What are you, an idiot? But he made it like this, oh, I guess it's the white guy. He didn't say that, but like, it was like a white guy getting beat up by a black guy. Mm. So, and he posts that on his damn Twitter. Like that's any kind of argument or any kind of real point you're making. Like it's not a police officer. It's not the person that we're paying taxes to protect us killing some guy in a freaking store. It's just a random crazy person that happens to be black beating up a guy in a store.
Mm.
You know, a guy that worked in the store. This should be all over the news. No, it shouldn't. What kind of news? Guy gets beat up in a store. That's really a headline worthy news. You know, but you see that in this age of the George Floyd thing where like you see all these racist people on the internet posting black people doing terrible things. It's like that's the thing that they do. It's like, look, these and it gives them it makes these racist people have the power in their mind.
Mm-hmm.
To, I mean the power to be allowed to say terrible things about blacks. So, oh, look, this black guy threw a brick through a window or something, or beat up a store owner or something. And it goes, these animals, these savages, we know you're talking about black people. You're not talking about somebody that did it, because where's the clips of the white boys doing it? Or it doesn't happen, because you're racist and you want to post that information. And I know the left does it too, where they'll turn everything racist when it's not racist. Mm-hmm. I know that happens too. So then people go, "Oh, you're calling me racist to win an argument," but which is true sometimes.
It's all reactionary. This is the thing,
manipulated.
Yeah. It's all right, man. I mean, the thing is with the internet is you can find whatever your perceived narrative or view is, and however you view the world, you can easily cherry pick examples. America's a big country, got 330 million people there, billions of human interactions. If whatever narrative you're trying to show, whether you want to show that women are violent towards men, or men are violent towards women, or white people are violent against black people, or black people are violent, you can find clips, you can find videos, you can find photos, and you can just fill your social media feed with those examples, and it will paint a picture like, whoa, what's going on here? Like, this is, and everybody, like activists on both sides do it, right? It's not hard for a BLM supporter to find individual clips of a policeman roughing up a black guy, or find, you know, little clips of bad things happening to black people, especially over the course of the last, you know, 15 years or whatever. That's not hard to do. Okay, go ahead.
You know, that's another thing when they try to pretend like, oh, this isn't a real epidemic of black violence by the police in the community. You know, they act like that isn't a real issue. Like a Candace Owens type says that, or people say, oh, this isn't a and then white people take Candace, oh, see, it's not a real issue. George Floyd was a terrible man. But the thing is, historically, police brutality did exist in the black community. And you're not hearing about these stories, but they're true. Like my friend Hostile, who died, lost his eye to cops. But not just him. Historically, it's been a known fact. And if you watch any comedian from every era, they go, yeah, they kill us. Like, it's documented by so many. Watch any movie, Fort Apache, the Bronx, they're throwing the black guy off the building, you know, like Do the Right Thing. You know, they said George Floyd and the dude that they choked out for the cigarette, the famous case.
Eric Garner?
Yeah, Garner. You know, Radio Raheem and Do the Right Thing. The cop choke him out and he's dead. And they've been doing that. But the thing is, now there's video cameras and now there's internet. They've been doing that in the black community.
Sure.
What's his name? Diallo?
Amadou Diallo. Yeah.
No, that's the one. Diallo's the one they shot up, right?
Diallo's the one who got shot like 41 times.
Okay, now that who's was like my man, a long time ago. Abner Louima in New York City? They raped him. They put the broomstick up his butt.
Yeah.
They violated him. They touched his penis.
Yeah.
They raped this black man in the precinct. Like, this is all real stuff that's been going on in the black community that they act like, oh, it's just a couple clips.
Yeah. Do you know the problem? The problem is that anecdotes versus statistics. Because the fact is that, you know, police do kill more non-black people than they kill. They kill more white people than they kill black people, but nobody.
Yeah, but look at the.
I'm aware of that. But the problem is, you know, people can list all of these names for black people, but how many white people killed by police in the past decade can people name, right? And in many cases, the answer is zero, despite the fact more of them have been killed. So that's why you get that reactionary thing. I think that's part.
Yeah, but you could use statistics like that and say, oh, look, there's more. Because it's, you know, it's a white dominated society in America.
Sure.
You know, there's whites everywhere. So of course, okay, maybe died. But it's also the type of way that black folks have been treated year after year after year. And how many stories are told? How many stories are actually told? And when you go into a white community, are they taking the men and raping them in the butt with broomsticks, or are they, you know, treating them like dogs, or like, you know, throwing them on, you know, it's not the same level. Like if you've lived in a in a black community, you see it every day. You see it. You actually see it. When you lived in a white community, you don't see it. And that's truthful. And they walk through your community and they treat you like you're a crook. They treat you like you're a criminal. That's all real. So when they go, well, white people were killed. Yeah, that's a deflection of reality, though, because, you know, the oppressed have been oppressed for this many years. They haven't been treated like humans. That's a fact. And the cops go into the community with the God complex and, oh, we're better than you. And black cops do it too. Sometimes that's another thing that the white people do, where they'll go, oh, it must not have been racist because a black guy did it. But he's in a system, you know, a black cop did it. No, but he's in a system where they all say, hey, these are the thugs. These are the thugs. Mm-hmm. This is thugs here. And I mean,
I don't know, man. I might be closer to Candace on this one.
How?
I don't agree with the, you know, when it came to the George Floyd situation. I mean, you know, I made a video about that as soon as the thing came out. But I'm not a fan of, like, I get both sides, and I'm certainly not a fan of this thing of, like, you know, sort of digging up dirt from a man's past, as they're doing with George Floyd, to somehow
sort of
try
to. It's the grossest thing in the world. And yeah, they're calling him every name on the planet. Oh, he's a meth head, horrible person.
Yeah, no.
Pregnant woman's head, which they don't even know if that's even true. That's made up. Yeah. That's not documented.
There's no documentation
that they put a gun to a pregnant woman's head. That's not real. They didn't. Yeah. They're just making it up, and they're going with the narrative because they want to believe that this is a horrible person because they want to bootlick and defend police.
Yeah. No, because that's irrelevant. And, you know, there's no that all that stuff, whether it's true or not, when it comes to his actual killing, it has nothing to do with it. Right. Like he could have to me, it doesn't matter
if he just shot up the frickin' bank.
You still don't do that.
Killed five people. Yeah. They had him restrained.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree with you. Yeah, I totally agree with you.
Put him in the car. You leave him there. Boom.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I totally agree. And that's,
and people be like, well, he was talking crazy.
Yeah. No. No. To me, like all like on the George Floyd situation, like my position's very clear. And I think it's a shame because I think, you know, for a very short period of time, I think everybody was actually on the same page, which is pretty rare because even when it comes to these police killings, a lot of them are a lot more contentious and you don't get the full clip, right? You might see the video of like, boom, someone gets shot and you can't really see what happened or whatever. But in this situation, you got like a 10-minute video. You can watch it in real time. You can see what happened.
Of an arrogant, you know, he did it confidently, knowing the camera was on him.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, hey, I ain't doing nothing wrong even.
Yeah.
You know, get back. I'm the God, you know?
Yeah. What I'm saying is, though, I think it's a big shame how much, you know, from that temporary moment of actual unity and agreement on that thing, whether or not people thought it was driven by racism or just bad policing or whatever, virtually everybody agreed this is extremely egregious. This should not have happened. And no one was saying this was great policing at that time.
Wait, but
okay.
I saw them try to turn it around, right? They knew they had to say it on social media because, you know, they didn't want to say it. They would say, oh, this is terrible. They shouldn't have did it, you know? And then all of a sudden you see cops on their pages putting pictures of like his family when his family got, you know, a Kickstarter that got $10 million or $5 million. I don't remember how much.
Okay.
Oh, the ghetto lottery they won. Oh, look at this. And then they start slowly bad-mouthing him. Go, oh, he was just a meth head. Oh, he was talking. And then all of a sudden, everybody that was in unity, they all turned on George and turned him into the worst person that ever lived that puts guns to babies, you know, pregnant women, you know, which that's not documented. Google it. It's not documented. Where you find the documentation that he put it, but they keep repeating this image. And I had a cop on the internet put a picture of this woman with her face all beaten up and destroyed, right? Mm-hmm. And I looked at the picture and it said, oh, George Floyd did this to her. She was pregnant. He put a gun to her belly. They put that on Facebook.
Yeah.
And I was like, yo. And I looked it up and it said, no, that's not even the woman. This is some woman that was beat up in Ecuador. And they're putting up this propaganda that George Floyd is this, like, that destroyed this woman's face and put guns to her. It's disgusting and it's racist. And that's where, and then when the police department speaks up and says, they're treating us like animals, and they have no remorse. It's like, and it's so ready to defend themselves rather than, but hey, listen, this has been going on. We're going to try. They have no sympathy. It's all ego. Their mm-hmm. egos and their emotion. Their egos and emotional. And if you're a police officer supposed to be protecting the people, how are you going to live off of ego and emotion and say the wrong thing to me and I'll choke you? You know, it's like that's not the way the world should be, man. That's not something that anybody should accept. And I don't understand what you could see in the Candace Owens speaking on police brutality where you can agree with her in any way. I don't understand.
That's interesting. No, I like I said, I don't think I disagreed with when she started going into the, you know, demonizing George Floyd and talking about his previous. Like, to me, that stuff's not, like I said, to me, that's not relevant. Like, that doesn't change my opinion on him getting killed when he shouldn't have been killed. And I don't think it's good to sort of distract people from the main thing.
It was the biggest distraction. But, and then all these racist white people would post it and be like, see, he was a piece of garbage. See, the cops are great. He was a piece. Like, you're justifying
an
American citizen.
Yeah, no, like, I'm very principled on these things. And look, I don't use the word racist too often because, like, you know, unless I've got evidence of that. For, you know, even George Floyd's killing, for example, right? People jumped immediately to this is a racist thing. It's like, look, they've done the exact same thing to, you know, a white guy called Tony Timpa just a couple of years ago. So I've seen this happen to people of different races.
What's the Tony Timpa case about?
The Tony Timpa case.
Yeah,
he was also choked out, and they were laughing at the time and stuff. And then, I mean, the worst police. So I need to go into detail.
How long was the clip? How long did they do it for?
Wow, I don't know that off the top of my head.
And I'm not saying it makes it any more or less bad, but the thing that infuriated everybody about the not just the murder, it was the murder, obviously. Yeah.
How long it went on for?
Just the murder. It was that, like, you can treat a human being
like
worse than a dog, worse than any animal.
Yeah.
And do it confidently and the arrogance on his face and just stepping on this man's neck and he's mm-hmm. lifeless and people going, yo, he's dead.
I'm killing him. He's dead.
Like I'm not saying that, you know, police brutality happens. Mm-hmm. You know, they're police. There's these men with big egos and God complexes and go around and you say the wrong thing. Like, I was in a train station trying to get a train to get with my, you know, my kids were with a babysitter. And I was mm-hmm. sitting down in Penn Station and the guy was like, said something to me. And I was like, yo, it's all good. And he started talking trash to me, ended up handcuffing me and put me in a jail cell in the damn, in the prison because of his ego.
Yeah,
but I'm not going to equate that to the everyday occurrence in a poverty stricken black community that, you know, they're treated like lesser of people by the police. I mean, you know, it's not documented or witnessed by you know thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands for decade after decade after decade.
I get you man. Like I understand both sides of it, you know. I'm very much
there's more proof of police brutality in the black community than there in 2020. There's more proof historically of police brutality in the black community than there's proof of Jesus. You know, like because you're only going off what the people say that he existed. And I'm not saying he doesn't. I'm a fan of Jesus. I'm a fan of the beliefs. But if I have to say, if somebody says, why do you believe Jesus exists? I have to go, well, people said and people said and people saw and people said and people saw. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as far as police brutality in the black community.
Yeah. Do you know the issue, right, is by limiting it to the black community is I think that that's part of the problem. Right. So when people specifically act as if it's a big problem with the whole Black Lives Matter movement, right, is that if people are on the narrative that this exclusively happens to black people, then it makes it a lot harder for people to unite around it because it's not factually correct. And by saying that, that doesn't mean that it doesn't happen in the community.
But people
are talking like it's exclusive. Right. And that's a big problem. A lot of people are, man.
No, I didn't say that people didn't say it. I'm saying that if they're saying it's exclusively in the black community, that's not a truth.
Yeah.
But it does go on at a higher level. It does happen every day. Black folks are mistreated by the police far more often than white people. I mean, you know, that is, it's not exclusive, but the you know, the mentality of a policeman in an American black community is a little bit more, you know, they treat you a little bit more degrading than in white, you know, at the white mall or the white 7-Eleven.
No, I get you, man. I think the problem is, like, I don't think this is a difficult issue for people, you know, of different viewpoints to actually unite on, but I think the conversation needs to go up a level, because I think, you know, we're kind of doing it now. I think people get lost in the weeds because the vast majority of Americans agree that police brutality is wrong and the police should not ever kill an innocent civilian unnecessarily. Everyone agrees on that. It doesn't matter, you're left, right,
whatever.
I don't
even know if that's true. At this point with social media,
yeah,
I don't
man,
even know
most, oh, true. Let's say well over 90% of people believe that.
I don't even know if that's true.
Really?
Because when I check, let me tell you, the kids, some of the kids that I grew up with, criminals, hated cops their whole life. Oh, you know, boom, boom, robbing houses, criminals, white boys, right? Mm-hmm. And then they're in their 40s and you know, Black Lives Matter happens and hey, stop, you know, killing black folks. And all of a sudden, everybody's pro cop, cops are doing the right thing. Look at these thugs breaking windows, cops. And it's like, wait, and there's all these excuses for every murder of a black person that happens. Oh, that guy didn't have his hands up the right way. Oh, that guy robbed a store 2 hours before the cop killed him, so he deserved it. He was a criminal. And you see memes where like Mike Brown, they'll be like, on his 1 year anniversary of his death, it was like, oh, 1 year since he didn't rob a store. A policeman put that on his Facebook on his 1 year death, you know, and people thumbs it up like, yeah, these scums. Like I think you're taking for granted that people are good in this society, that
know,
so
man.
Many people are good.
Yeah, I mean, I know that exists. Look, on the internet, you'll find people saying disgusting stuff about literally everything. I guess my point is that, like, I know this exists, right? I'm saying it's a minority. It's a very small minority, which can still mean thousands of people. Can still mean thousands. It could even mean you know, if you could have 2 million people,
well, more
right?
than hundreds of thousands. You know,
it could be millions, but those millions can still be a very small minority given the size of the U.S.
How many people thumbs up the Candace Owens video when she you know made George Floyd into the worst human being that ever lived? Was millions of people sharing it, thumbs up. You know, it's in the millions there, you know, on that alone, on the one clip alone, mm-hmm. millions. Oh, yeah, thumbs up. He was a piece of garbage. He's a piece of trash, terrible person, garbage. You know, for a man that was murdered, an American citizen that was murdered by the people who are supposed to protect us. And let me tell you something. Another thing is, sometimes it isn't like a racist KKK cop, you know, that, hey, I'm going to go just kill this N-word. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's not that. But what it is they have this fear of a black criminal in their mind. So a regular ass black person can walk somewhere and, oh, he probably has a gun. Oh, there's this mentality in their mind where they believe that that's the criminal. The mm-hmm. black man is the my threat. He's going to make it where I can't go home. He's the threat. And if you're that emotional and scared to be in the streets, you know, like maybe you shouldn't be a police officer.
Agreed.
You know, oh, he's
Agreed.
Gonna kill me, he's gonna hurt me, that black guy is gonna hurt me, yeah. you know, because that does exist, and that is a big problem
Agreed.
Too. Oh, restrain him before he hurts me.
Yeah, no,
I gotta go home to my kids.
Yeah, you're literally touching on what I was gonna say is the second thing that I think the vast majority of people agree on, right? I think most people agree on, yeah, most people agree, look, racism is bad, and most people agree that the cops should, you know, I don't see many people who are opposed to, you know, people have different ideas of how to do this, but getting rid of, you know, having higher standards for police, having better training, having, you know, getting rid of people who have PTSD or who have like massive psychological issues, those should not be police officers, you know? And I think, again, I think most people agree on this in terms of how to do it, whether it's getting rid of qualified immunity or it's, you know, breaking up the unions or doing this or doing that. I don't know all the policy ideas, but I guess my point is when I'm seeing people kind of bickering over, do we say Black Lives Matter or do we say All Lives Matter? Do we say this or do we say that? And, you know, is it this? And I'm kind of like, you guys are actually agreeing on the core point, But
sometimes
it's, yeah, I think for the most part, look, you're never going to get total agreement on it, on anything.
A lot of the times they'll use the All Lives Matter slogan as a deflection of the situation. That would be like, oh,
some people do.
All lives matter because I'm white, you know,
I know a lot of black people who prefer the All Lives slogan to the Black Lives Matter slogan.
I don't know too many.
Okay. Well, I'm just saying that's a real thing. Okay. I think All Lives Matter is a better, I don't go around and hashtag it, but
what does All Lives Matter mean to you? Like, why does that need to be said?
Because I don't think that society properly recognizes that. I would even prefer All Black Lives Matter to Black Lives Matter, because Black Lives Matter exclusively focuses on
black lives.
No, but it doesn't. It focuses on black lives killed by white police officers in very specific and rare circumstances. If the movement was, we want to stop black people from dying and from getting killed, we've got a whole bunch of other conversations that we need to be having. And if they were having those conversations, I'd be much more on board with that movement and that sentiment. But because they're totally ignoring them, I mean, more people have died in the BLM protests than died in the George Floyd incident by multiple factors. But no one wants to talk about that.
Yeah, but part of a revolution. I'm not saying the Black Lives Matter thing, but part of a revolution is people do, you know, if you're going to take, you know, the fall of the Roman Empire, not everybody's going to survive. And I'm not saying, oh, go kill.
Yeah, well, you know, to me, that's where I can't get on board at all. You know, like if I'm saying, look, I care about black lives. I don't want black people to die. I don't want anybody to die. And then I see, okay, one person dies and then 20 more people have died as a result of this. Well, I'm like, no, like I do maths, right? I'm like, no, that doesn't work for me. You know, that doesn't work.
Yeah,
for
but
me.
You're talking about fighting a machine of systemic racism. You know, I know that's a cliche to you guys, but
it is a cliche. Yeah. But what does that mean? You know what I mean? Like, that doesn't mean anything.
Well, because there's a system that has been in place for decades and decades and decades and decades, and nobody does nothing about it. So now the people are standing up and they're trying to fight, you know. Yeah. And I know that the Black Lives Matter group has been infiltrated, and people that aren't for the right cause, you know, are coming to the things. And, you know, Black Lives Matter as a, you know, they say the Soros funded thing, and you're brainwashed if you follow that. But I think a lot of people don't care about Soros or any of that. They care about, hey, listen, I'm a black person. I think that my life matters, mm-hmm. and I need to say it because some people don't think my life matters. And I don't think that's a wrong slogan for a black kid or a black person to say, hey, look, black lives matter. I'm black. My life matters. Because for decades of being treated like a lesser man, a lesser person, not being given the same opportunities.
But who's look, let's be 100% real. If we're looking at the USA, who is it that's killing black people?
Oh yeah, I know that, but that's a deflection because that's not.
No,
that's
but
not
how is it a deflection?
Who's killing white people? Why don't white crime exist too?
It is,
people live in the same community.
Yes.
Together.
Yes.
They're going to kill each other.
Of course,
so people live in the same community. White people kill each other.
But white lives matter is not a slogan. White lives matter is not a movement. White lives matter is not a whole thing. And if it were, I would be saying,
because the system isn't holding back white lives or treating them like the lesser of people. The system doesn't do that. White lives shouldn't be a slogan.
Yeah.
Argument they say with black power to white power. They go, why can't I say white power, but they can say black power? Because the black power movement came out of oppression, where the oppressed people had to say power to my people because you took it away from me. So black power. So white power is a part of white supremacy, where they say we are the superior. We don't need equal. We are the supreme and we dominate. So black power is, hey, listen, we are the, you know. So that's the same argument. Well, you know, why can we say white lives matter, black lives matter, white power, black power? Because when something is oppressed, you're allowed to fight against your oppressors and uplift your own people. One, black power is upliftment. White power is the tearing down of other people, and is part of racism and the Nazis and Ku Klux Klan at all. It's white power. Black power is, look, I'm proud of who the hell I am. I'm a black person. That's what black power is. You know, I don't want to feel inferior. I don't want blonde hair, because my whole childhood, a little black girl wanted blonde hair. She got the little blonde doll. She saw Marilyn Monroe on the TV, you know, in the 50s, 60s, 70s, you know. They always, you know, white was always the superior being in their presence in American culture. So then they say, no, we empower ourselves. It's a power movement, Black power. There's not white power and Black power is not the same thing. Just like White Lives Matter and Black Lives Matter is not the same thing.
Yeah, man, we're going to have to do a part two of this because we're definitely strongly disagreeing on this one. But yeah, man,
Think white power and Black power are the same?
I wouldn't put it that simply. But I think if people are going to bring, I'm not a fan of, I'm very much an equalist. I'm very much an equalist, okay? I'm not someone who plays the dynamic of oppression, perceived victimhood. It's okay this way, it's not okay that way, etc. So if my view is, look, if you can say Black Lives Matter, if someone can say Black Lives Matter, someone can say White Lives Matter. Someone can say Asian Lives Matter. Someone can say All Lives Matter, etc. Same with the, you know, Black Power, White Power, etc. Like, I'd rather we just don't play those games. Like, I'd rather not get into the Black Power thing, White Power thing, etc. I think all of that is just like, that's my personal view on it.
They can say whatever they want, but then I wish they would say what they want because then they get exposed. You know, yeah. If you want to run around and say, white people, white power, you're exposed. So let them say it. Let everyone say whatever the hell they want.
Man, absolutely.
I'm for free speech. let the Nazis speak so we know who the Nazis are. Don't let them wear a fake mask and be like, I like everybody. You know, let them be like, I'm a Nazi. Let us know. So let everybody speak. Let everybody show their true colors. But all right, man. Yeah, we can do a part two.
Yeah, man. No, it's been I've enjoyed the conversation. I have another interview to do, so... right. But yo, you've got your latest album out now. All My Heroes Are Dead. Where can people check that out?
It's everywhere. Just Google All My Heroes Are Dead, R.A. the Rugged Man. You know, we got some videos out. All Systems Go video just dropped, and we got another video with Immortal Technique dropping soon.
I'm sick.
And working on some more videos. We're trying to get one shot for me and Inspector Deck, Wu-Tang, and you know, but go just Google All My Heroes Are Dead. It's on every platform, Spotify. I think YouTube blocked a couple of the songs. I think
Hate Speech,
I don't call Hate Speech or something. I think they blocked that. But or they did it on the album version. I don't know. There's something that everybody was complaining about. But
okay,
I Google it. It's on my channel. But I think if you get the album as a whole on YouTube Music or whatever, they don't play that song for them. It's not included in it. I don't know. Some weird thing. But all right, man. Nice talking to you. They're going to have fun with this one.
Yeah, most definitely. It's going to generate some good conversation, man.
Talk to you soon.
I am the man. Sick with the slang. Sick and I'm destined for fame. Do for the fam. Not for the gram. Stunt and you're destined for pain. I do not front. I do not scam. Put some respect on my name. Sick like Obeying.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.